I think it always makes sense just to be super upfront and direct about the fact that the number one reason that owners participate in these programs is it becomes a really meaningful revenue stream for their business that obviously helps increase the value of their property or portfolio, because ultimately they're increasing their operating income.
Hello, welcome to Students of Storage. I'm Matt Inkfer, the co-founder and CEO of Cubby. We're the self-storage platform that makes growth simple. We make software for facility management, revenue management, call center management, and more. Today, I'm joined by Nate Kinnett, who is the CRO, or Chief Revenue Officer, over at SafeLease. He's based in Madison, Wisconsin, and excited to chat with him today. All right. Thanks for being here, Nate. How are you?
I am very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you coming on. Where are you today?
I am in Madison, Wisconsin.
Madison, Wisconsin. Is this the home office?
This is my home office. Well, no, it's in a co-working space, but it is technically remote. So
Nice. You got to get out of the house sometimes to get some stuff done. I appreciate you being here. Let's start with your story. Tell us about your role and how you got there, your professional journey, and kind of what interested you in ending up at SafeLease and now being with the company. And then we'll talk a little bit about SafeLease itself, but tell us your story.
Sure. So for those who don't know, I'm the Chief Revenue Officer at SafeLease. We are a technology-enabled insurance provider for the self-storage space. What that means is we provide tenant insurance, tenant protection, but also recently property and general liability insurance to help owners protect their facilities. I started my career in New York City in sales, got into the tech world, lived in New York for 6 years at a few companies, but probably the most meaningful was a company called Trustpilot. It's an e-commerce review website or platform. Interestingly, at the time, this was back in like 2013, my sales team sold into the self-storage vertical. And this was like my first kind of exposure to storage. Little did I know that I'd work at a storage company a decade later. But we did really, really well in the self-storage vertical over the 4 years that I was there. I left Trustpilot. I spent 4 years at an insurtech that essentially helped brands build digital insurance businesses as a bolt-on to their core business. So think like an online car retailer. They sell cars. They want to sell insurance as a nice add-on. And our APIs powered that. And so I had this kind of strange mix of insurance and storage. And kind of the worlds collided when I was introduced to our founder, who was looking for a sales leader who had up a sales team at a self-storage insurance company. So it was almost too good to be true.
Awesome. I have a couple of questions double clicking on that. First of all, how did you get introduced to Steven, the founder of SafeLease?
I was actually found through Headhunter. Nothing super interesting there. Steven set out on a search to find a sales leader. I don't think when he set out on the search, he thought he'd find someone with kind of a unique background that I had. But yeah.
Cool. And Trustpilot is a reputation management-esque company, right?
It is. Think of Trustpilot like Yelp. The way you use Yelp for restaurants, right, or local businesses, you use Trustpilot to essentially validate the trustworthiness of online businesses. So there's a B2B side where the online retailer will collect reviews, and then there's a consumer-facing website where people like you and I can go and eventually understand the reputation of businesses before we decide to make a purchase or rent a storage unit, et cetera.
Cool. And it surprises me when I look at your career. You started at Trustpilot in, I think, 2013. And within 4 years, I think you started as an independent salesperson, right? And within 4 years, you were director of sales for that company. And then you moved to Shure, the insurtech company that you mentioned. And within another 4 years, you were the chief revenue officer. That's pretty rare. How did that happen? How did you accomplish that? Pretty quick ascent from individual contributor to a CRO.
So when I started at Trustpilot, Pilot is a Danish company. And when I joined the company, I was the second employee in the U.S. So the big kind of strategic drive at the company at the time was to expand in North America, obviously the biggest market. And I was very fortunate to follow a VP of sales who I had worked at a previous company. He left to be the first employee at Trustpilot, and then I followed him. So I was employee number two in the U.S. Similar theme at Shure. I joined very early. I was one of the first 10 employees at our Series B. And then at Safereese, I was the first employee. And so I always like to say that I took a couple of risks joining companies earlier. I think you've probably seen it in your career working at some of the companies that you have, right? You get in early, you are successful, then opportunities typically present themselves. And the way that I think about this, and people that are close to me have heard me say this, but guys like me or guys like you, when you were a sales leader, like the way that I think about it is we get four or five at-bats in our career, right? And you're trying to maximize each one with the different companies. And so, you know, I certainly think getting in earlier helped me personally.
I think that's true for self-storage professionals also. You don't get that many at-bats. You got to maximize the chances you get. Cool. So tell us about Safelease. How did it get started? What's the kind of origin story and where is it at today?
Yeah. So our founder, Steven Stein, he is a self-storage owner. First, before Safelease came to be, he owns 20 plus properties across the country. And his properties are largely managed by REITs. And they do a fantastic job with a bunch of stuff, but one thing in particular was the way that they drove adoption of their tenant protection program. And so I think over the first couple of years of him owning this portfolio, 90% of his tenants had a protection plan. And he saw the numbers that came along with that and kind of set off the light bulb, like, wow, there might be an opportunity to create a product for the rest of the self-storage market. They're the part of the market that's not managed by REITs. And it set him off, on a journey to essentially build a product, the insurance product, but then also develop some technology, and we can get into that later on if you'd like, to essentially go and sell sort of 80% of the self-storage market that's non-REIT managed. This was back in 2021. We started the business in 2021, May of 21. It was Steven and I at the time. Obviously, the world was crazy with COVID. And so we started the company remotely. Fast forward to today, our product is distributed in over 3,000 facilities across the country. And team, I think, is around 60 employees currently. And we're spread out, but do have an HQ down in Austin, Texas.
Okay, cool. Let's start with, you guys do a bunch of different stuff, and I think you've built an incredible reputation within your customer base. People that you work with really appreciate you as a vendor, as a partner. Let's dive into like what exactly it is that you're doing for them. Let's start with tenant protection. I think the first question is like, what is tenant protection and how is it different than tenant insurance? This is an elementary question, but you know, I just like the level set. And why is it better or different?
So I think the folks that are going to be listening to this obviously will have familiarity with storage. Tenant protection and tenant insurance are the two different products that facilities distribute or sell to their tenants at move-in. Typically, the way it works is the store will say, hey, John, you are required to have insurance in order to rent a unit. That's part of your lease. You either can show me your own insurance or you have to buy this product that we're selling you at the counter. The analogy that I always use is it's very similar to you're at the rental car counter. The guy at the Hertz counter is saying, hey, Matt, in order to get your rental car, do you want to buy my damage waiver? And you're like, no, I don't want to spend whatever money. Okay, who do you have insurance with, right? They want to know that you have insurance with someone.
Right.
Apply that to self-storage, right? That's tenant protection or tenant insurance. The product that storage facilities sell is either a tenant protection product or a tenant insurance product. They're very, very similar for tenants. They operate effectively the same way. You pay an additional amount of money every month, and then you're covered for damage or theft of your stored stuff, the stuff you put in your unit. The differences are on the back end with how the risk gets transferred to the insurance carrier. There's some different regulations on the different products. To be super clear, we offer both products. We offer tenant insurance and tenant protection. We started as a protection plan, and then we added insurance. We think both products are good products. We think there's pros and cons to each. But at the end of the day, like the insurance product or the protection plan at this point, they're pretty commoditized. Our protection plan, our insurance product are pretty similar to the other companies that offer those pieces of paper, because that's what they are, it's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
The difference is like the technology around it to make the program successful, right? That's like really what I think sets us apart.
Okay, so I want to talk about that, but when you decide the difference between if you're going to offer a tenant insurance product or a tenant protection plan at your facility, what are the trade-offs you're weighing if you're fully understanding that with the decision you're making in that moment?
Sure. So I think the big one that most owners will think about is, do they want to become licensed as an insurance agent, essentially? In order to sell tenant insurance, you have to carry what's called a limited lines license in most states. And so effectively, you are being regulated the same way that your State Farm agent is down the street. And we hear all the time from owners are like, guys, I own a storage business. I don't want to deal with this insurance stuff. And that's perfectly reasonable. With protection plans, the risk gets transferred from the tenant to the owner. And then the owner is transferring the risk to an insurance company. And so the downside for some owners there, they say, I don't want to be part of the liability transfer. With insurance, it goes directly from the tenant to the insurance company. And I'm oversimplifying it just for the sake of not getting way too into the weeds. Well, with protection plans, owners are like, I don't want to have to be involved in this liability transfer. And so, again, pros and cons to both. There are others, right? You have more flexibility with setting prices for tenants with protection plans, less on the insurance side. And so it really is kind of pros and cons, and whatever at the end of the day the owner is most comfortable with, we will support.
Would you say that the primary trade-off in that decision is accepting liability in order to get some more freedom or flexibility around how you manage your revenue? Is that the primary decision point?
I think that's a pretty good way to put it. I don't know that I've ever summarized it that way, but I mean, essentially, I think the other thing to keep in mind is insurance has been around for 30 plus years. I don't know exactly how long. Protection plans have only come to be in the last like decade and certainly gained popularity over the past few years. And so I think it's one of those things too, where just like there's a lot of folks who have always just known the insurance model, they're more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
But change is always uncomfortable to a certain extent. But I think as more companies adopt protection plans, then more people become used to the concept or idea.
Okay. So let's talk about what outcomes can an insurance or tenant protection product help a storage owner achieve? And I want to get kind of define the goals here, and then we'll back into how technology and the way you manage them can improve those things. But what is an owner hoping to achieve when considering one of these products?
I think it always makes sense just to be super upfront and direct about the fact that the number one reason that owners participate in these programs is it becomes a really meaningful revenue stream for their business that obviously helps increase the value of their property or portfolio, because ultimately they're increasing their operating income. That being said, there is a lot of value to tenants as well.
Right.
Things go wrong all the time. It could be something as simple as a leaky roof or mice getting into your unit and chewing through your couch. And so they are selling their tenants a valuable product that will make them whole should something go wrong. And a lot of owners also like the fact that when things do go wrong, the tenants aren't coming to them and saying, hey, make me whole for this. Our owners can say, well, that's why we have an insurance requirement. Go file a claim with either your protection plan or the other insurance that you provided us.
And how do you operationalize unlocking those things? Whether that's achieving more revenue and how much revenue should you expect to unlock if you're doing a good job, and then diverting customer service issues or whatever it might be. But let's start with the revenue piece. How do you operationalize it?
So everyone gets really fixated on how much of each protection plan or insurance policy the owner gets to keep, right? People commonly refer to that as a revenue share.
And what is that typically?
It'll vary.
Not just for you guys, but for in the space.
In the space, I don't know, anywhere from 30% to 80%, I think, is okay. Like a good range. And it's a big range. And obviously,
pretty wild.
Range. So think of that as 30% of $12, all the way up to 80% of $12 on a monthly basis. And so a very well-executed or implemented program at a storage facility can be as much as 8, 9, 10% of their operating income. And so again, it is super meaningful. Again, people get really fixated on the revenue share. What we really want to focus on and what we talk a lot about when we're pitching prospective customers, working with existing customers, is really the important part is the enrollment, right? If you only have 5% of your tenants enrolled or 10% of your tenants enrolled, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. What a well-run program will see is anywhere from 80 to 90% of their tenants enrolled in a Safeways plan or whoever their partner is. And that really comes down to how you're implementing the program at the store level, how you're enforcing your lease requirement that says to tenants, hey, you must have insurance. And traditionally, that has been a pretty big lift, heavy lift or burden on store managers. And what we've tried to do is build technology and automation to remove that burden from store managers so that it's just running in the background, making sure that tenants have insurance and ultimately are complying with their leases. And so that's what we've built technology to really focus on and help facilities kind of offload.
Okay. So what are the different touch points that the automation is like looking for that actually drive the results of getting more revenue from your protection plan program?
It's actually pretty simple. There's a few, right? Right at move-in, decision number one for the tenant is, are they showing their own insurance or are they adding on a protection plan or tenant insurance policy? And so that's going to be built in, right? When we have customers on Carbity, super easy, super slick. They choose their unit size, they choose their protection plan, it just gets added. Then for customers who opt out, we're asking them to upload their own insurance. That can be through softwares directly like Cubby. We also have built our own portal to help make it super easy for tenants or store managers to upload insurance. And then on a go-forward basis, we're monitoring every single unit in our ecosystem every day to make sure that the tenant either has a valid insurance policy on their account or that they have a Safeways plan. And so it becomes this like constant compliance engine to make sure that 100% of your tenants always have valid insurance while they are a tenant of yours. Just to compare, like in a pre-Safeways world, store managers would audit like once a month or once a quarter, and then you'd realize a whole bunch of tenants have insurance policies that are expired. Then it's this whole manual effort to reach out to tenants, like becomes this big thing, really hard to keep up and keep current. And so again, we just tried to like take that off of store managers' plates altogether.
Makes a ton of sense. I've seen it. The automation really makes a big impact. Auto enrolls, things like that. Anything you can do to take one unit of human effort out of the loop seems to make a big impact on enrollment and dollars collected, things like that. What are, obviously you guys have worked with 3,000 plus storage facilities. The folks that are achieving kind of like the highest levels of, you know, attainment, revenue, enrollment percentages, operationally, how do they adopt your product differently than someone who might be struggling to get that percentage of tenants enrolled in a protection plan up? Like, what's the difference between a great adopter and someone who's not?
Look, it's a good question. I think there's a lot of different ways you can go with that. I think probably the number one thing that we hear or we see is owners or operators who say, we are on board with enforcing this insurance requirement. But then when the rubber hits the road and there's a tenant who's like, I don't want to have insurance. What is this? Making it seem like the world's about to end. They give them a free pass, right? They dummy the insurance information. They don't make them comply with their lease requirement. And so it's kind of like letting people slip through the cracks in fear of losing a tenant to a facility down the street. The reality is, what we've seen, and obviously have a lot of data, is when stores enforce these requirements, like, you will get some blowback from a few tenants, right? It's like, same as a rent increase. You'll get like 5 phone calls, and again, they're going to make it seem like the world's ending. But a day later, they get on with their life. It's not worth packing up their stuff and moving down the road. And so I think the biggest thing, back to your question, is like the difference between someone who really successfully implements this and not. I think it's being a little loosey-goosey with the insurance requirement itself. As long as you're on board with that, again, like the technology automation is just going to drive and manage the program on your behalf. There's not really much you have to do on a day-to-day basis.
We see it all the time. Like, if you're sitting behind a desk at a storage facility and someone comes in moving in because they're going through some significant life transition and something happens, it could be anything. You will do anything in your power to resolve that customer's anxiety in that moment. You will enter credits. You will invent money and enter it into the accounting system. You will waive a requirement for tenant insurance or tenant protection. It's just a super stressful moment. And I think that, like, what we see is that the folks who kind of see lower attainment percentages in tenant protection or higher waves or things like that, it's just a matter of they kind of don't have a well-understood customer service plan. How do you address customer issues? What are the tools that you actually have at your disposal? And without site managers or call center agents really understanding those things, they hit the first button they can reach. And often that's something like a tenant protection plan, but that those things compound. And like, if you just have a good customer service plan and training for how to address these issues without giving away the store, so to speak, like people, you're right. People, we see it. Tenants don't really have too much of an issue if you just deliver the news in the right way.
I think you make such a great point. Like, for starters, we still can get a lot better at training store managers, because a lot of times we sell our product to the owner, but then they're like, hey, store manager, go implement this. And the store manager's like, what do you mean implement what? Like, and then on top of that, store managers turn over quite a bit, right? And then sort of like, how do you keep this like constant training going so that the new person always knows what's going on? And then if you don't have a store manager and you're an owner operator, right? Like, you don't want to be dealing with angry tenants about tenant protection. That's kind of why you own a storage unit, so that you're a little more hands-off, at least for some folks. And so, yeah, a lot of it is like putting a really solid plan in place.
Let's talk a little bit more about property insurance. This is something I don't know nearly as much about. You guys have a property insurance product that you recently introduced, right? Let's start there.
Yes. So, quick backstory. Obviously mentioned how many facilities we work with. So we have tons of conversations on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. I can't even tell you how many times people reached out to me personally and said, hey, Nate, do you know where we can get property insurance? Or do you guys do property insurance? We're getting absolutely crushed with premiums. You go to conferences all the time. I'm sure you hear people talking about it. It's one of the most talked about topics at shows. And we kept hearing this feedback. Myself, Steven, I mean, our entire team. And it kind of set off the second light bulb maybe a year and a half ago, where it was like, hey, maybe there's a better way for us to bring a product to market. And so we set off on a journey about a year ago to build a brand new bespoke property and casualty, so property and general liability product for storage facilities. We're working with the same insurance carrier that we work with on the tenant side. And we brought it to market as of March 1st. And to save some time without going into a ton of details, what we've done is we've stripped out some coverages that are not relevant to storage facilities. because a lot of times products elsewhere in the market, they're built for a wider range of commercial asset classes. So we stripped out some non-relevant coverages. We're handling claims in-house. We have our own reinsurance business. So we're taking on some of the risk on the program. We're also going direct. And so we have some efficiencies by vertically integrating different aspects of the insurance stack to be able to be really cost competitive. And we're 3 months in at this point. Reception's been really good. We're obviously learning a lot. We have a lot of stuff we can improve and get better at in terms of how we're selling there and just the opportunity as a whole, but definitely off to a quick start.
Cool. You've identified there's this problem in the market. You've specialized a product for self-storage, and with the skill set that you guys have in-house, you're able to put something together that makes a little bit more sense and strips out some of the costs. Aside from what SafeLease is doing, what's the problem out there? Why is there such fervor around this conversation? And like, I see it in all the forums, you said all the trade shows. It's just like people are very frustrated, and it's not just happening in self-storage. I own a rental house in Florida, and we've had 3 insurance companies in 3 years. But what's going on under the hood in this market?
I think there's a lot of things that are going on, but I think the 2 big things that get brought up the most are, 1, rising construction costs, right? So when a claim happens, they're more expensive for insurance companies. And then I think 2, there have just been more natural weather events that have caused losses. And so I think those 2 things together have had a big impact on increasing costs across the industry. And so, yeah, I mean, we've heard stories from folks about just monster increases over the past few years, and they've been working with the same insurer, no losses, for 2, 3, 5 years. But every single year, they're getting, hey, your renewal quote's going to be 20% more, 25% more than the previous year. And so that becomes really impactful when you think about it, because insurance is one of the biggest line items on the expense side of a storage business.
Yeah.
And so obviously you want good coverage to protect what is probably your most valuable asset. But at the same time, you're trying to balance that against, like, what does that mean for the expense side?
Cool. Yeah, it's super interesting. I'll be keen to see what you guys can do in that market. One more question on kind of tenant protection, insurance, maybe property insurance. One of the things that I hear some people kind of noodling on often is setting up a captive. And, you know, in talking to Steven or you in the past, I think that there's some misconceptions out there around, like, the benefits that can bring you, depending on your scale and that kind of thing. Have you run into this where an operator's considering setting up a captive, or you're talking cost benefits with them and helping them with those decisions? What is your take on this in self-storage as it relates to tenant protection or tenant insurance, first of all?
It's another big question, right? There's a lot to unpack there. I will preface by saying I'm not an expert in captives, but I can tell you a few things. So typically, the folks that set up their own captive and have their own kind of in-house program, you have to have a certain scale, right? You're not going to do it if you have 1 store with a couple hundred units. It's typically folks with big portfolios and thousands or tens of thousands of units. There is going to be more work involved. You have to figure out who's going to handle claims, just in terms of the general setup and administration of the program. But the upside can also be much bigger on the financial side. And so I think those are some of the trade-offs. The one thing I will say is we work with companies that have 30, 40, 50, 60,000 unit portfolios. They're still working with a third party. And I think that is somewhat of a reflection of the amount of work that it is to set up a captive and manage a captive. And some folks just say, it's not worth it. It's not our area of expertise. It's not what we want to be doing.
Very helpful. I'm always curious about that, because it does, I think it surprises people how much work it is actually handling all those claims. I do want to talk about reviews and reputation management and things like that. But before we do, your team, it amazes me how you guys have been able to penetrate the market so quickly. I think is a testament to, like, the business team that you guys have built there. Talk to me about this, and why is it a competitive
advantage for you? Like, what did you build and how does it help you?
Yeah, I think you'll probably appreciate this more than most, given your background working at high growth tech startups. But really, that's what we did. We brought like a SaaS tech sales engine and put it in the self-storage insurance world, which largely didn't exist, right? If you look at our competitors, typically smaller teams, it's typically much more relationship driven. What we've done is we've built an army of BDRs and we're getting in front of every self-storage owner that's out there, right? I think last year, our sales team made 110,000 cold calls over the course of 2024.
Incredible.
And we run that operation with data. They are very process driven. We have very kind of process driven handoff to our AEs and then our sales process. We have used that as an advantage because, again, that's just not the way that our peer set sells in this space. And, you know, I don't think it's a secret. That's how we're driving demand, and it's largely worked for us up to this point.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, not a lot of people, but some people hear the word salesperson and they think it's a dirty word or something like that. I don't think that's true 99% of the time. I also think it's so funny that people who sell insurance are some of the most voracious salespeople in the world. And then you get into self-storage and it's I didn't see it. Like, there's all these insurance companies that are not really selling. They're not out there pushing their products very hard when in every other vertical, the top insurance companies are extremely aggressive from a sales and marketing perspective. I think it's been part of the secret sauce for y'all.
It's super interesting. It's been a lot of fun to build a team in a space where I'm used to being in a world where like my competitors sell the same way and it's like the same type of sales motions. That's just not the case. And whether that's right or wrong or good or bad, I don't know. For us, it's certainly been a differentiator and helped us grow at the rate that we have. And I think establish ourselves within a space where really our peers that are companies that have been around for a really, really long time. There's not really many newcomers on the insurance side of storage beside us, maybe one or two others, but I would consider our biggest competitors folks who have been around quite a while.
Yeah. Well, let's talk reviews. Your time at Trustpilot taught you this. You knew it well before you guys ever got into the game at Safelease with reputation management software that you're now offering. What's important for an operator to know in this space, and what's your view on reputation management and self-storage as it stands today?
Yeah, so this one is kind of a funny one because, again, I have this like experience with reviews and it's come full circle here. We built a reputation management solution that helps storage operators collect reviews from tenants, right? And indicates them onto Google. So when people are searching for storage facilities, they're going to see someone's awesome reputation and be more likely to go and rent a unit there. Storage operators obviously are very focused on their Google reviews and live and die by their reputation, essentially. What's interesting is we've talked a lot about insurance on this call. There's probably folks that are like, well, how do you guys do reviews? You're an insurance company. Well, this actually came out of a hackathon with our engineering team. And the reason that we worked on it was one of the biggest reasons that facilities get bad reviews typically coincides with an event that a tenant would file a claim for, right?
Got it.
There's water damage in their unit, or there were mice chewing the couch again, right? What does the tenant do? They go and leave a one-star review, and that reflects poorly on the facility. We built a software that automates review collection for facilities, helps them manage their reviews, and helps them display reviews online. And there's just a way to help manage your reputation overall, but ultimately get more people in the door if you're displaying really positive customer reviews.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I think it's important. We see it on the online rental side. It generates a ton of activity. If you have really good review management program in place, it boosts your SEO. There's a lot of benefits beyond the obvious immediate ones.
And it's interesting, right? Because there's a ton of reputation management companies. There's a million solutions. You can go get Trustpilot being one of them. Company I used to work for, but there are very few companies that are triggering review invitations to tenants at the most optimal time of shelf storage customer's life cycle, right?
Yeah.
Is it best to invite someone right when they move in, when they're really excited about their unit? Is it best to invite them when they move out? Is it best to invite someone to leave a review when they've accessed the gate, maybe 24 hours later, because you know that in the past 24 hours, that tenant had a need for their storage unit. They're probably feeling pretty good about it. And so what we've done is we've built different triggers to invite tenants to leave reviews at optimal moments. And obviously we track all the data and figure out what's converting the best to give operators the best chance of collecting really good feedback.
Anything that you can share, or is that secret sauce? What are the best moments to convert that you've seen?
Well, the best one is move-in. The problem with move-in is that they haven't really had any other experience than talking to the store manager. So that typically tends to convert the best. People are excited because they needed storage. They just got their unit. So we typically will trigger some review invitations. I think it's 24 hours later. But that's an ongoing experiment across a whole different variety of touch points and trying to figure out what's the best.
Cool. So SafeLease has grown into a reputable name, and you've got 60 employees, 3,000 facilities leveraging your services. What's next? Where are you taking it? And what do you hope to achieve kind of in 25 and beyond?
Yeah, good question. And a tough question, right? I think there's a lot. I've been here a little over 4 years, and I'm really proud of what we've built. I'm really proud of how far we've come, the team we've built. We have some great people. I think people love working together. But in a lot of ways, I feel like we're just getting started, right? Like this launch of this new property and casualty business feels a lot like it did back in 2021 when we were just getting the business off the ground. And so it's like, we're kind of back to square one. There's such a big opportunity with this property product. Every facility has to have property insurance, right? You don't have to do tenant insurance or tenant protection. And so there's just a massive opportunity for us to capture. And so it's really refining, iterating, improving our sales process on the property side. You know, man, if we could get that into 3,000 facilities the same way we've done with tenant protection, there's going to be a lot of possibilities for us as a business. But at the same time, there's a ton of work that needs to be done. And yeah, that's really what we're focused on.
Cool. Well, I hope you get there. You guys have been great partners to Cubby. We appreciate it. It's really nice to have a tight integration and an engineering team that works in lockstep with our engineering team to kind of improve the integrations and things like that. We appreciate it. And it's been great talking to you. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, I'll just close, Matt, and say, you know, give you a similar compliment, right? I think very similar to why we have an opportunity on the Safely side. You guys have an opportunity to innovate in the space. I always describe, like, when someone asks me about Cubby, I always say, like, we appeal to the same type of storage owner that's a little more technology forward, innovative. And I think that's why our partnership's been successful. And yeah, we're super bullish on Cubby. We love working with you guys. And hopefully we can support many more mutual customers.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Have a very good run.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to Students of Storage. Links to any resources mentioned in the episode can be found in the show notes. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good one.